Hey, everybody, this is Mark in San Francisco.
And this is Gordon in Boston.
And this is Build Phase.
What's up?
Oh, nothing.
Yeah.
Just tired.
Yeah. It's been a long week.
That and I usually get into the office around 10 these days.
Oh, have you?
And then on Friday, I'm like, or it's Thursday night, and I realize I should go to bed because I have to get up at 6:30.
Yeah.
That never happens.
Yeah. I was up at 5:30.
And then that's normal for you, right?
Yeah, but then I also went back to bed.
Mm.
I didn't actually go back to bed. I went to the couch and I just went to sleep on the couch.
Hmm. That's an interesting tactic. Once you're on your feet, once I'm on my feet, I can't go back to sleep.
I decided last night to not go to the gym this morning and that I wanted to try to. It's been a really long week, so I wanted to kind of just reset, kind of. And so I decided last night to not go to the gym, and so this morning when my alarm went off at 5:30, I was like, no, there's no reason for me to be up right now. Like, I was planning on just waking up and watching Justified, which is what I do in the mornings if I wake up at 5:30 and I don't go to the gym, is I just watch TV and eat breakfast. It's awesome. But I was like, that's not – I'm not doing this. I'm just going to sleep.
So, what's Justified?
You don't know Justified? Oh, man. It's so good. It's on FX, I think. Yeah, it's on FX. It's Elmore Leonard, Raylan Givens. So Elmore Leonard has a character, Raylan Givens. It's in like three books and one short story. It's like this Kentucky – this guy from Kentucky who's in the Marshall Services. And so, you know – all of his books, and he's just kind of this old school cowboy style guy, but he's working for the Marshall Services in like present day. So he's like, it's like if you just took up John Wayne, like classic John Wayne kind of characters, and then just plopped them into modern day. I don't know. It's really the first two books in the short story are super, super, super well written. And then the fourth book is such a huge pile of dog shit. Like, I couldn't make it through half of the book before I was just like, I can't fucking do this anymore. But the show is great. The show's on FX. It's in its like fifth season or something. So, it's got, what's his name? I don't remember his name. You'd know him if you saw him. He was you remember Go? The movie Go? Come on. You've seen Go. The one night from different perspectives drug movie thing where they go. You haven't seen Go?
No, I'm sorry. I'm Josh Clayton. I'm Josh Claytoning. How old are these movies?
1999, man.
We're the same age.
I know. Hmm. You have to have seen this movie. Oh, good. Now I can see what his name is. His name, it's Timothy Oliphant. You know Timothy Oliphant?
Oh, yes.
He was in Live Free or Die Hard. Hitman.
Yes, I remember him most recently from Live Free or Die Hard.
Yeah, Live Free or Die Hard, Hitman, Go, I don't know. Oh, Deadwood, right. He was also in Deadwood. Have you seen Deadwood?
I think I've seen an episode of Deadwood.
God damn it. Whatever. Anyway.
Eh.
He's the main character in Justified, and he's awesome. And it's a great show, and you should watch it.
All right, I'll check it out. That whole time you were talking, I'm trying to like suck down as much coffee as possible to be more funny. I can just hear myself just sounding like Al Gore. you are hearing me talk.
That doesn't look like a French press coffee that you had.
Nope. So I didn't have time to do my normal routine, so I went to the Keurig. But somebody's been making tea in the Keurig. So when I made it, all these like tea leaves came out of my coffee.
Nice.
I'm like, well, screw this. And I poured it out and then I went to the fridge and got this double shot espresso thing. It's not very good.
That's shocking.
Because I'm not used to like this much dairy. Yeah. And I'm not enjoying it so far.
We were out of cream here. I went and I made coffee and I was like, what the hell am I supposed to do now?
So you just didn't have coffee.
No, I'm drinking coffee. I put milk in it.
Mm. This is such exciting podcasting.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I guess we should talk about something real. So do you want to talk about interviewing?
Yeah.
And what kind of what we look for in applicants and that kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is essentially prompted by Aaron Vey. He's a developer in Canada. He was talking about he was going on an interview and they immediately made him do kind of those typical bullshit code questions. And he said that it just he completely blew the interview just because he was like hard to operate well under those circumstances. And I kind of he never responded to me, but I kind of started ranting about it. Like every one of his tweets I was talking about, I was just messaging him and back being like, I have strong opinions on this. So. Have you ever been in one of those situations? How'd it go?
Yeah.
How'd it go?
Yeah. So when I was doing a lot of applying and interviewing in 2012, every other place that I interviewed at beside Thoughtbot had me do some sort of like code challenge like that. Mm-hmm. I think there were four places, three out of the four, it was the same exact challenge.
FizzBuzz.
Reverse a string.
Oh, reverse a string. Yeah.
Because Foundation doesn't come with a reverse right. or anything. And so by the third time I got asked this question, I was like nailing it.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time I definitely stumbled over it. And I think it cost me the interview.
Yeah. I can't stand that tactic. I really, really, really can't. Because I kind of went through the same thing, right? Where I had, you know, again, interviewing and I think I went on a job application for a Ruby job, actually. And it was like probably a really crappy idea. And it was good that I didn't get the job because, you know, I'm not as good at Ruby as I am at iOS. But whatever. But like they were asking, you know, I had to do I literally had to do FizzBuzz on a whiteboard, you know? So do you know FizzBuzz?
No.
FizzBuzz is like the archetypical interview question. The idea is given a range from 1 to 100, print out the number unless the number is divisible by 3, in which case you print out fizz. If the number is divisible by 5, you print out buzz. And if the number is divisible by 3 and 5, you print out fizz buzz. So it's like 1, 2, fizz, 4, buzz, 6, 7, or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah,
like,
yeah.
So, and then the kind of main thing is you should be, if you write fizz buzz correctly, you should be able to change the range to any number. It should be able to be in an infinite range and fizz buzz should still work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so, kind of like one of those things. It's like, I guess that's an interesting puzzle, but I'm never going to do that ever. Like I've never.
Yeah. I guess they really want to see like how you think about it.
Yeah.
But what that comes down to is like, do you know about modulo?
Right.
Like, that's what that specific right. question does.
Right. Exactly.
And you're under pressure, which most of the time, you know, you're not going to be under pressure.
No.
And even if they say,
you know, like this interview specifically, I had like a bunch, you know, every time there was someone going, you know, it was like, okay, so look, you know, there's no right or wrong answers to any of these. It's just about how you think. And it's like, bullshit, there's no right or wrong answers. Like, it's a test question. That's exactly what this is. There's absolutely a right, in my head anyway, even if they sincerely meant that they weren't going to judge me based on my actual answer, they just wanted to see how I thought through a problem. You know, like questions that they didn't know the answer to. And it's like, how would you do this? And it's like, you know, it's like a 15-minute interview or, you know, a half hour long interview. And I don't know. I need to spend actual time sitting, thinking about this. You know, it's not something, you know, it's stressful as a interviewee going into those kind of a situation. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, There's I'm sure that there's people that excel in those kind of situations, right? That are like, love that like on the spot problem solving, love having to be in that kind of a situation, but I don't think that that's an interesting metric for hiring necessarily.
No, because it's not the condition in which that person will be working, right. Which I think is the point of every interview, is to try to simulate exactly what those conditions will be like and then evaluate their problem-solving skill. So someone like myself, who's fairly introverted, like when someone's sitting over there, like looking over my shoulder, watching me try to solve something, 25% of my brain is like worried about this person looking at what I'm doing. And the other 65% is like working on the problem, and 10% is probably thinking about candy, right. Which is just typical. That's fine. But, you know, usually it would be 90% working on the problem, 10% candy.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, even if I'm pairing on something. So like today, for example, I'm pairing on a Mac app. The same Mac app that I was doing mockups for a while back. We're kind of doing a reboot of this internal application to see if it's worth pursuing internally. And so I'm pairing, and it's a Mac app, and I'm pairing with one of our Ruby developers. And like a good portion of my brain is not focused on what code I'm writing. A good portion of my brain is focused on like, don't make a typo. Don't, you know, you're typing too slow. You're a slow type, you know, just like doing all this kind of like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, don't look at the keys. Don't look at the keys. You can't look at the keys. You're supposed to be a typist. You can't, you know what I mean? That's not something that I think normally, you know? So, right. I don't know.
So what did you do during your interview at ThoughtBot? Was it just pairing with?
Yeah. So I had, I did an over the phone technical interview with one of our developers. And, I basically sent him, an app that I had built. And it actually kind of sucked, right? I said, hey, whatever you do, don't look at master. Just look at this branch over here.
Master, that instills confidence.
Yeah, yeah. It's like master is awful. I'm just going to be honest. Master is just awful. And to be perfectly honest, like the branch I told him to look at wasn't. It was a lot better than master was, but it wasn't like anywhere. Like, this is an app that I've literally just killed outright at this point, because I'm like, I don't have time to wade through this kind of shit. But so I was like, look at this branch over here. And then once I got in the technical interview, it was very obvious that he just looked at master, and I was like, shit. But you know, we just talked about the app, and he asked me questions like, you know, I see you're doing this. Can you tell me why? You know? And it's like, sure, yeah, you know, I at the time I did it this way because I was dealing with these limitations, and you know, based on, you know, limitations mainly that I had caused myself, but it was kind of like, explain why you did the things that you did, even if they're wrong, right? Even if like if you look at a piece of code and you're like, that's objectively wrong, what they're doing. He was trying to get to why I made that objectively wrong decision, right? Is there some kind of deep-seated misunderstanding that's easily cleared up that will lead me to not get to that objectively wrong decision? Or is it just a whole bunch of things? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of questions like that. Like, why did you do this? He actually was looking at the Git commit history and was like, you have this enormous commit. Can you tell me why you have this one huge commit? It's like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't remember why I had that one commit. I think it was actually a merge commit. I don't remember. So there's a lot of questions about like an existing application that I had built. Like, I think that's the key here is that this is something that I had built on my own without pressure, right? This is what I was actually writing. And then kind of asking me, you know, if you had to do the whole thing different, if you started this same project today, what would you do differently from when you started this project originally? It's like, So now I can talk about, oh, I would have rather, you know, have testing set up. I would have made, you know, better OO decisions, better networking decisions, better everything decisions, you know. So I did that, and then we have a non-technical interview. So basically the stages here are like code review, and at any stage you can kind of be dropped out of the process. So code review, and then a non-technical interview with Chad, our CTO, CEO, where we just talked about, you know, just trying to get personality stuff down. You know what I mean? You know, are you excited about working here, kind of a thing? You know what I mean? Is your personality going to mesh with the personalities that are here now, or, you know, or are you coming in with a huge ego and that kind of stuff?
For me, that part comes down to like, would I want to pair with this person for 8 hours?
Exactly.
And also, because we're a consultancy, can I put this person in front of a client?
Mm-hmm.
Will they, like, if I'm not around, will they be able to conduct themselves professionally and explain things well and like be the face of Thoughtbot that we want everyone to be?
Right, exactly. Or are they saying things that you're like, wow, maybe I shouldn't put this person. I can't, like, if you're thinking, I can't leave this person alone, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or am I going to have to, you know, read this person's emails before they send them off to a client? Can I trust this person to just email a client directly and say the right things, or, you know, whatever? So then after that, there was essentially the technical interview. I don't think I had like a straight up technical interview. I just came in for pairing. And so for pairing, like I just came in and I basically worked here with a developer for 8 hours. You know, I think I got here at 9 and I don't think I left till 6. And typically we would do half a day and half a day, right? So you'd pair with two different people so you can get two different opinions on the person. But, you know, like you were the only iOS developer at that point and you were in San Francisco. So we weren't going to do remote pairing and I wasn't going to go to San Francisco and whatever.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think we were both interviewing at the same time.
Really?
Like, I think you interviewed even before I had started. Yeah, we were kind of like in the process together.
Hmm.
You only started a week after me.
A couple weeks, but.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, but the point is that now, like, we would do multiple pairs. You know what I mean? Like, if someone comes in San Francisco, they could pair with, you know, you and Diana, or Theo and Diana, or you and Theo. You know what I mean? And then here, they could pair with me and Tony. But it was literally just like, hey, let's sit down and, you know, Goose, the guy that I was pairing with, he didn't touch the keyboard all day. It was just like, you know, if you have questions about something, feel free to ask, talk through your process. We're going to pair, but I'm just sitting here. He did origami all day. And,
this is all sounding very familiar.
Yeah. He did origami all day and I wrote a Twitter client. That's exactly
what I did too.
Yeah. And it's a good exercise, you know what I mean? Because I hadn't dealt with the social framework that much at that point, not for building like a standalone Twitter client like that. So, so that was it. And that part of the process is partially designed to test skill. You know what I mean? Like part of that is definitely like, you know, how are they able to write code on their own, and are they able to problem solve on their own? But the other part of it is like you said, can I actually pair with this person for 8 hours? Can I sit with this person and have them sit next to me for 8 hours and not want to punch them in the face? That's a good metric.
No, totally. You just can't tell people that, Gordon.
What, that you want to punch them in the face?
Or that's like your bar.
I think it's a decent bar.
It really cuts to the core of it, I guess.
Yeah. So that's basically, that's basically our process here.
And fun story about when I was pairing. And I thought I had completely blown it because about halfway through the day, I started getting this crash in this Twitter app that I was building. And I was like barely into it. I'm just like displaying tweets in a list.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something was not hooked up right in Interface Builder.
Mm.
And I'm pretty sure at this point it was an Xcode bug that kind of like masked this issue.
Mm-hmm.
But what it came down to was when I went to change the custom class of a cell, I typed the letters in, but I never hit enter in that field. And then I was like, oh, I need to do this. I switched to a file and then switched back, and it like touched the interface builder file, I think. But whatever I had typed in that custom class was still there, but it had never been like written into the XML file.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time I tried to run it, it was like blowing up. And I spent like an hour trying to figure this out as Goose is like making me a paper owl. And I totally thought that I had blown it. But I think it actually probably helped because he learned more about how I debug things than just like watching me cruise through building a Twitter app.
Right. I actually think that's more valuable. Yeah, exactly what you're saying. You know what I mean? I think that seeing what people do when they run into a problem or run into something that they haven't seen before, you know? So that was like a good thing for me in this case was like I said, I hadn't done any really deep stuff with the Twitter frame, the social framework, and I wasn't familiar with the Twitter API at all. So he gave me a basic understanding of how the Twitter API worked, and then, you know, was like, you know, okay, we should do this now, you know, like kind of walking me through the steps of what I would need to do to build the Twitter client. So not like I had to just kind of like figure it all out, but it was like, you know, basically here's what we want to do. We want to kind of go through these steps, and then just letting me figure out how to do those steps, you know. I ended up with a problem where I just wasn't thinking and I was reloading the table view after fetching the tweets. I was reloading the table view and I wasn't explicitly doing it on a background thread, but it was being called from a network callback. So it was implicitly being run on a background thread and I was running. And I never forced it to reload on the main thread. So I was doing this. It was taking forever. It wasn't manifesting itself in a way that immediately made me say, oh, this is being done on the main thread, obviously, right? Like when you have a table view and it does nothing and then you like try scrolling and everything pops in.
Right.
That's very, very obviously, oh, I must have refreshed it on the background thread. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? This was doing some weird things. He was like, it was making it look like the network was hanging, like just kind of nothing was happening. And so it took me a little while and then we finally figured out, oh, right, duh. I'm, you know, calling this method from this network callback over here, which is implicitly going to be run on a background thread. So I need to force it to be run on the main thread over here. That kind of stuff.
What was your interview experience when you interviewed Jack? Like going into that, how do you interview the guy that wrote the book?
Man, and he's gonna listen to this too. So. I mean, Jack's an awesome guy, but Jack's been doing Objective-C since I was like 9, you know, I think my main thing with Jack, and I think I've communicated this, you know, it's like guys like Jack, guys that are super experienced, I don't think, you know, you're not going to be concerned about, do they actually know what they say they know? Like you said, like when you've written books and, you know, you've worked for the kind of companies that like Jack's worked for, like, you know, he knows how to write Objective-C. I'm not worried about that. What I'm more concerned about at that point is like, how interested in are you? How interested are you in like moving the platform forward? You know what I mean? Like, my main concern was like CocoaPods and testing, right? Because there's so many people out there that are just kind of like, and if you have reasons for not liking CocoaPods and not liking testing, that's fine. I'm okay hearing those reasons. My problem, my main concern when hiring a more experienced developer is like, we want to experiment. You know what I mean? All I want to do is go and experiment with stuff and try to figure out the best way to do things. And if you've been doing it long enough that you've convinced yourself that you know hard, fast, here's the best way to do this, you know, it makes you less flexible to trying new things. And it makes it harder to, you know, if you're not willing to kind of still play around and try new things. Try Reactive Coco, for example. You know what I mean? Which Jack's been playing with, and I think is a great asset to the team, because I don't understand. I still don't really have a firm grasp on Reactive Coco, but he's been doing KVO long enough that he has a better, he can kind of like transition right into Reactive Coco stuff with less overhead.
It's kind of like, I think we've talked before about masochistic programmers.
Yeah, yeah.
The people who insist on doing things the hard way because that's the way they've done it for so long, and not wanting to adapt when, you know, new versions of the compiler come out with new language features or new frameworks. I've interviewed at least maybe just one guy like that.
Yeah.
And it was just a little concerning. I mean, he knew his stuff and he was personable enough. I was just worried that he wouldn't be willing to kind of like keep up with all of our research and constantly redefining our best practices.
Yeah. I think the most interviews or most applicants that we do, I feel like get weeded out at the code review stage, and that may be good or bad. I'm not entirely sure. You know, maybe we should be better about bringing people in to talk to them to see if they're a cultural fit or a personality fit. But like, I'm picky about red flags in code review, right? Like, one is if you don't have stuff on, I'm not saying you should be doing open source work all the time. You know what I mean? But the kind of people that we tend to hire are the kind of people that like to do little, I don't care. It doesn't have to be a whole app. You know what I mean? Like, if we ask for code samples, we're not looking for a, you know, you to submit, you know, the Facebook.app. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't need to be a big complex app. It doesn't even need to be an app. All I want to see is how you can tell a lot by how someone codes. If I open a file and it is written with manual retain release and it was created 3 months ago, you know what I mean?
Yep.
That tells me a few things. One, it could mean that you've been learning in a vacuum and you're working off of incredibly old source material. You know what I mean? Which isn't great. You know what I mean? If you wrote it 3 months ago and you're learning and you're writing manual retain release, you either don't have a firm enough grasp on retain release to move to Arc, or you're learning off of bad info. Or the flip side of that is that you love manual retain release. And the main problem there is that at this point we're kind of past, like we as a company, like the iOS team here, we're kind of over manual retain release. We're not super interested in writing that kind of code. So if you feel super strongly about all my code needs to be written without Arc, then that can cause problems, because the whole point of the way we work is to have people basically be Lego pieces, and you should be able to swap. You know what I mean? Like, I should be able to work on an app and then have you jump in, and our style should be close enough, and our you know, theory about the way code should be written should be close enough that you can just start working where I left off, and, you know, we can swap people in and out like that. So if I come into an app that's written without Arc, there's going to be that moment where I'm like, oh crap, this thing has retain written all over the place. Now I got to change the way I would normally write, you know?
Yeah, totally. I think it's necessary for us to weed out most of our applicants at the code review phase, just because of the sheer number.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get quite as many as the Ruby folks, but we're in the unique position of having people come to us. Like, ThoughtBot doesn't really have to do a lot of recruiting, and that's a really good place to be, because we kind of get our pick of the litter,
yeah,
so to speak. I don't really think if the red flags mount up and in the code, or something else for me is if I go to someone's GitHub page and I don't see those little like experimentation apps, you know, especially when I was reviewing code right after iOS 7 came out, I kind of expected to see like, here's a repo where I've been playing around with UIKit dynamics or new API somewhere. And I understand that like people have jobs and they don't necessarily want to go home and code, but I think what that shows is passion. And that's one of the things that I like to see at the code review stage.
So maybe maybe it's not a red flag, but it's like a, because I think that could be sending the wrong signal, right? It's not, okay. It's not a problem that they don't have that stuff, but when you do see that stuff, it's a plus.
Okay. Yeah. That's a better way to put it. Because if they don't have it, I'm not going to discount them immediately. I'm just going to ask for you to pull something out that you're super proud of or that you think shows something really interesting and send me that and kind of explain it a little bit. That's perfectly valid. I totally get like if people don't have, you know, GitHub pages that are like flush with all these toy repos and stuff, especially if you're already, you know, in the business working 40, 50 hours a week on code.
Right.
Yeah, I get that. So I guess it's a bonus to see that sort of like passion and excitement about what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that's the critical way to phrase it, right? Is that it's about stacking up the positives, not necessarily stacking up the negatives, right?
Yeah.
We're like typically when I'm looking, if I'm looking over someone's code, what I'm hoping to see is someone that I'm excited to work with, right? Like, oh, this person is using all these things and, you know, they have this, like, they're doing this stuff that maybe I am not super familiar with. And I think it would be really interesting to have someone that has that kind of knowledge on the team. You know what I mean? Like Tony's, for example, Tony's understanding of like Bluetooth technologies and like hardware stuff is kind of freaking amazing. Like the dude's an electrical engineer and he was sitting in the office last week designing a freaking Arduino board, you know? So like that's the kind of person that like we don't really have that anywhere else on the team.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that intellectual diversity is good to have.
Yeah.
You know, similar situation with Theo, his math and physics background has come in handy more than a few times.
Right. Right.
Yeah, definitely looking for people that can round out the knowledge set that already exists on your team is another positive.
Yeah, I mean, I'm I'm constantly striving to hire people that are going to make me feel like an idiot.
Exactly.
That's what I want. That's what I want. I want people that I want to be the dumbest person on the iOS team. You know what I mean? I really, really do. I really want to be the stupidest person on the iOS team.
I will fight you for that.
Because if I'm the stupidest person on the iOS team, it means that all I can do is learn, right? Every bit of feedback is going to be learning for me. The last thing I want is to be the smartest person on the iOS team. And I can firmly say that I'm not. So that's good. Good job, me.
That's why we have the podcast.
Right. I mean, it's that, you know, you never want to be the smartest guy in the room kind of a thing, you know. You want to be around people that make you say, like, holy crap, I never thought about that at all.
Mm-hmm. What do you do if you do end up being the smartest person on the team?
Find a new job.
Just leave.
Serious. Because that's a problem, right? And it may be a systemic problem in your company if you're the smartest guy on the team, right? Like if your company can't attract smarter people than you, then I mean I always operate under the assumption that I'm an idiot. Really. You know what I mean? No,
yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean.
I'm always like, you know, gonna be like, you know, this company is doing me a favor. You know what I mean? By keeping me on. And so from my perspective, if I'm the smartest person, I would be like, why can't this company hire actually smart people if I'm the smartest person? Because I'm not smart, right? I'm an idiot. So if I'm, you know, if I'm the best that my company can hire, that's probably not a good sign.
Do you think this is like residual imposter syndrome?
Oh, it's all imposter syndrome. I'm basically a meat sack full of imposter syndrome. That's all I am. I'm just walking imposter syndrome.
I'm writing that down for a show title.
A meat sack full of imposter syndrome.
Yes. Okay.
That's fair.
Meat sack.
Yeah, no, I really would. I really would. If it gets to that point where I'm the smartest person, I think you have to move on. I really do. And I think that everyone at ThoughtBot is conscious that, you know, like, learning's a big part of our culture specifically. Like, we've kind of beat this horse to death at this point. But learning's expected. Learning is encouraged. You should always be experimenting with new things, you know. Different languages, like, we have people that do Haskell, we have people that do Clojure, we have people that are really good at shell script, we have people that are, you know, insanely good at Ruby, we have people that are really good at Objective-C, we have people that are really good at C, we have people, you know what I mean? Like, there's always someone that you can go, like, hey, I don't know this thing, can you teach me this thing? You know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's super important.
And I think another side to that is that if on the course of your personal development, you kind of decide that you're ready to move on to something else, like, it seems like people typically leave ThoughtBot for product companies for one reason or another.
Yeah.
But maybe they feel that, like, they've gotten what they could get out of being a consultant at, like, the best consultancy in the world.
Right.
And now they're ready to, like, focus in on something else. And
right.
We don't hold any ill will towards those folks. Like we believe so strongly in personal development that if, like, that's the next step for you, then awesome.
Right. Absolutely.
Like, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And have a great time.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your hypothetical next step there, Gordon?
I said this a bunch to friends and family and stuff, but I couldn't see myself going to a different consulting agency, honestly. Like, I'm so spoiled by the way we do things, and I like it so much that if I'm going to do something else, it would be a product. And it would have to be a product that I feel really, really passionate about, because I'm just really bad with ADHD and stuff. So, you know, it takes a lot for something to maintain my attention over long periods of time. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I like about consulting too, is, like, you know, every few months or so I get to try a new thing and try a new problem in a new domain, and I can try new ways to solve those problems. Maybe it's the same problem. Maybe it's just core data problems, right? But I can try new methods of solving that same core data problem that I've, you know, until I find the one that's like, yes, thank you, this is the freaking answer, you know? And now mm-hmm. I can move on to other problems. So you can't really get that with products, you know, if you're doing one thing, unless you just, you know, trash the app and restart it. You know, you're mm-hmm. not going to be able to get that same kind of constantly creating new projects, constantly, like, refining your workflow, constantly getting that stuff down.
Yeah. I think you could do it with a product, but not in the short cycle that most startups operate in of, like, getting something to market and kind of, like, building it out and constantly having to course correct, mm-hmm. like, when a company is that small. But I think if you get to work on something long enough and you know the code so well that you feel comfortable, like, refactoring this whole thing right here and trying something new,
mm-hmm.
then, like, that becomes, like, a really good sandbox to do those kinds of things in.
Mm-hmm.
But you really have to be on a project long enough to be able to get to that point, like, mm-hmm. years, I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is possible. But like what you were saying of constantly getting to do something new every couple months, the thing that I like is that when I augment other teams, like, that's just even more learning from people that are, like, outside the sphere and getting to use all kinds of different tools. Like, I think I've used almost every project manager at this point.
Right.
And, you know, like, then you get to be like, oh, I've used all of these and I really like Trello.
Yeah.
And you have good reasons for not liking Pivotal Tracker.
Yeah.
For instance. And that just helps us refine our own processes. So that's going on across 50, 60 people. And then we're constantly distilling that down into research and then applying it back out across the company.
Right.
I don't know that other consultancies do that. I don't think they do, from what I've heard.
All right. I don't know. See ya.
We don't really have a bunch of show notes this week, so I guess we'll link to the playbook. That might be good. That's kind of relevant to ThoughtBot's hiring practices. It's all laid out.
Yeah, I'll go through and we may pull. I don't remember what we talked about. We'll try to pull out some links from this. And so the show notes are going to be found at podcasts.thoughtbot.com/buildphase/24.
And as always, we want to hear from you. So email us at buildphase@thoughtbot.com or contact us on Twitter or app.net at buildphase. Also, ratings and reviews on iTunes, please, please do those because they're super great. Even if they're bad, we like feedback.
Yeah, no, we do. All right, man.
All right, I'll talk to you later.